I'm Carol Cohn, and welcome to Purpose 360, the podcast that unlocks the power of purpose to ignite business and social impact. Today's show is going to be one of my favorites in over 3 years. And that's because I had the wonderful opportunity, after waiting quite some time, to get on the calendar of Edmund Scanlon, who is the CEO and executive director of the Kerry Group. Now, who's the Kerry Group, you might ask? Well, if you're in the food, beverage, or pharmaceutical industries, you know them really well, and you're likely engaging with them. Kerry is the world's leading taste and nutrition partner for the food, beverage, and pharmaceutical markets, with an extensive range of ingredient solutions that currently reach over 1 billion consumers. They're an amazing company. They're 50 years old this year, and they started as a dairy cooperative in County Kerry in Ireland. And I know when you go into their archives, you can see the farmers leading their cows and wagons holding very large containers of milk. And it was from an ingredient, a byproduct of that milk, that began to launch the Kerry Group. Well, today, they don't take their milk to market on the back of a wagon. They are a massive global company. They have revenues of $7.75 billion in 2021, 22,000 employees all over the world, in 36 countries and in over 150 manufacturing locations. They also have 1,100 R&D scientists because they're constantly seeking innovative solutions for food ingredients to provide greater nutrition to food in many, many ways that will also help to sustain the planet. They're publicly held, and they have over 18,000 products. While I'm not going to tell you what their purpose statement is, I do want to share that Carol Cohn on Purpose was invited on the journey to guide Edmund Scanlon and his Chief Public Affairs, Communications and Brand Officer, Catherine Keogh, to discover and then to introduce and embed their purpose into the company. And you're going to hear not only how the journey was conducted, but then how it was introduced and how it was embedded. Let me just give you a little bit of copy from their current annual report about their purpose and their vision. Across the globe, our purpose, and I'm not going to say it, you're going to have to wait, is central to everything we do. The impact of our purpose is in evidence through our people, our products, and our commitments to protecting the planet and improving lives. It is embedded across our business and the decisions we make, and how we innovate and grow, and how we partner with our customers to create lasting value. Our purpose guides us in our vision to be our customers' most valued partner, creating a world of sustainable nutrition. And the report goes on about how they integrate purpose into their culture, their operations, their innovations. It's a fabulous report, but what I believe is most important is just join me in hearing this conversation. So join me and Edmund and Catherine in this amazing conversation. I really, really appreciate both of your time because I know that you're very, very busy individuals. So welcome to the show, Edmund and Catherine.
Thanks, Carol.
Thanks, Carol. Great to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you back. And for our listeners, we had the delightful opportunity to partner with Kerry in 2018. So it's been a while to journey together to explore their purpose. And that's what we're going to discuss today. the journey, the process, why it's important, some of the challenges, and then, of course, many of the outcomes. So first, let's start. Edmund and Catherine, can you both just share a little bit of your backgrounds?
Well, I'll start at the start, Carol. Born and raised in a dairy farm in County Kerry in the southwest corner of Ireland, which is the same place where Kerry the company was founded as well. So my links with Kerry go back to when I was born, and my parents were farmers supplying milk into Kerry Co-op, which was the precursor of Kerry Group. So Kerry has been part of my story since the very, very beginning. And I joined Kerry as a graduate then after university. And I guess my career, firstly, for the first, let's say, quarter of my career, it was in the forming phase of my skills and finance and financial control and commercial finance and what have you. The next part of my career I spent in the U.S. I spent about 10 years in the U.S. in different types of roles, in our taste business, in our applied health and nutrition business. I spent some time in M&A. And then the next part of my career was at the other side of the world in Asia, and spent 6 years, 3 years in China, 3 years in Singapore, and then became the privileged to become the CEO of Kerry in October 2017. So just 5 years ago, almost exactly. So
I know it's almost like you were born into this job. It's almost like your fate, which I think is extraordinary. Now, Catherine, please share your background, because it's actually perfect. It's almost that you were born for this role.
Well, I was not born in Kerry, but I was born in a place, and I grew up in a farm in County Meath in a place called Kells, which is famous for a book. So, Carol, I studied in Dublin and in Germany, and after I graduated, I spent 20 years working across France, Germany, Canada, and spent many years in the US, and came back in 2016 to join Kerry Group. And then when Edmund came in as CEO, he asked me to join his team. So I've really only had two companies that I've worked with in my career, and I've been really blessed that both have been purpose-driven businesses, and something I suppose I'm very passionate about is building teams, building brands, strong, authentic B2B brands. So that's a little bit about me.
And you do an amazing job, and we're going to hear more about it. So some of our listeners know who the Kerry Group is, but many don't. But you have a huge impact on food and nutrition and beverages around the globe. So, Edmund, can you explain to our listeners, what does Kerry do?
So Kerry sits in the, let's say, the overall food and beverage supply chain. And we sit between, let's say, raw material manufacturers, let's say, processors, agribusiness type manufacturers, and food and beverage manufacturers that we'd all be familiar with, whether it's the Nestlés or Unilevers of the world, or all the major food and beverage manufacturers in the world. Kerry would work with them, providing them different types of ingredients and technologies that allow them to actually make the finished product. So we describe ourselves as a B2B business. From a scale perspective, there's about 1 billion products consumed every week with a Kerry ingredient or a Kerry component in it. And what we've been trying to do is set ourselves up as the type of organization that can enable our customers to develop products that are healthier, that have, a lesser impact on the environment, and that are generally better for you. We've been enabling customers both to meet their nutritional goals as well as their sustainability goals.
And because you develop from a dairy cooperative, that you talk about from food for food. And that gives you a very special and different philosophy and experience. So what does that history mean, that heritage, to your business today and in the future?
it's a hugely important part, let's say, and a part of our heritage. I mean, this is where we came from. This is how we were founded as an organization, exactly for the purposes of, as you just described. What was interesting, though, what was a little bit different about, you know, how we evolved was, what did we do with that milk when we actually got it? And many companies decided to put that milk into a bottle or into cheese or into drinking milk and things like that. We actually processed it in such a way that created ingredients for the food industry. So developing, you know, one could say fairly simple ingredients like skim milk powder, whole milk powder, casein, which became very important ingredients into the manufacture of cheese and, you know, any sort of a product that requires dairy ingredients. So our heritage actually is natural food ingredients. That's our heritage. And of course, that's what consumers are looking for, right? They're looking for products with the types of ingredients that are natural, that are good for you, that have a minimal impact on the environment, that are healthier. And that's why we feel we're very well positioned for where the consumer is going today. And that's all based on where we've come from as an organization.
Catherine, would you like to add anything about explaining the background of the company and its vast impact in the world today?
Well, I've had the opportunity in the last few months. We're developing a documentary to celebrate our heritage and look for towards the future. And we interviewed Edmund's the fourth CEO in 50 years. And what was amazing to hear from all of the CEOs, maybe articulated each time slightly differently, but, you know, that commitment to From Food for Food, that commitment to the heritage, never forgetting where we came from, but always looking to the future and I suppose, you know, expanding and advancing and developing as an organization. But I think another thing that came through to me in those discussions was the importance of local communities and the social impact of Kerry today and the potential. Edmund just mentioned that we reach 1 billion people every week with an ingredient or a solution. And our ambition, Carol, is to reach 2 billion people with sustainable nutrition by 2030. So while the ambition is on a much greater scale to the, let's say, the forefathers who supported local communities in their local environments, I suppose the ethos or the philosophy of supporting communities and having impact has not changed.
I want to go back, and I'll never forget this, when we started working with you and we're in Edmund's office. And on the wall, he's got these diagrams and he's showing about purpose and driving a company and such. And so, Edmund, if we can go back in time a bit, because this is about, I guess it's 2018, you decided as a absolutely brand new CEO that you wanted to discover or uncover or evolve Kerry's purpose. Why was that so important to you as you were starting out on this incredible role?
You know, coming into the role as a, let's say, as somebody that grew up in Kerry, you know, I joined Kerry at, you know, 21 or 22 years of age. It was my first job out of school. So, you know, I grew up in the organization and I had been in so many different parts of the organization and, you know, felt I knew the organization incredibly well. And I guess I had the opportunity to be in so many parts of the organization. I felt that there was a feeling around what our culture was, what our purpose was, but I didn't think it was consistent. I didn't feel that there was a consistent perspective of what we're trying to achieve, where are we trying to go. But there was an incredibly strong emotional alignment around, you know, what we were doing, and that what we were doing was actually a good thing. But we hadn't defined it. We hadn't got it down into words. We hadn't got it down into a page. So I had I guess the idea really that that was time well spent to actually go out there, understand, get the words to come up through the organization of how we describe the culture of Kerry, you know, the why. It was all about the why we exist, why we get up in the morning. And we started through a series of questions, and you know, we got lots of different words, but what we got was a huge level of engagement around that. We were doing something really good. We were doing something that we could be really proud of, and that was really the whole idea and the kickoff of the process.
And Catherine, I'm sure you were, you know, you were new too. And so Edmund's turning to you and saying, I want to do this process. So what was your initial, I'm curious, your initial response? And then how did the two of you work together? Because this was deeply embedded and the inquiry that we went around the globe, which was Edmund's desire. You know, I really want to touch so many. So, you know, what was it like when he said, hey, I want to do this? And what were your initial thoughts?
Okay, so my initial thoughts were delight that you know, we have a CEO who was very clear on, you know, defining our purpose and committing himself to being involved in that. And he had a very clear vision as to why he wanted to do that, why it was important. I did have to overcome a little bit of imposter syndrome because a lot of our executives have been here for 15, 20 years. So, but I suppose in a way that helped because I had no baggage, I had no agenda. So my approach, Carol, from the very beginning was really trying to listen and ask questions. And I think it's fair to say, Edmund, I did that almost independently. So that. You know, I suppose I was really speaking with executives who didn't know me that well. So I was able to, let's say, ask the dumb questions and really keep going further to really get an expression of how they viewed the organization and what various, you know, I suppose, references and touch points and we talked to the values and to their vision and how they viewed the evolution of the organization. So really my approach was, you know, learning from experts like yourself, Carol, with other people who I met through my informal and formal networks, reading and really looking at best practice. We did look around at other B2B organizations and shared stories about how they had evolved their purpose. So I think the questioning and just being curious and not coming in with any defined pathway, but just feeling our way in the early stages, having the discipline of a process, which you and your team brought to us also, but also just feeling our way through that in the early stages, because on one level, you know, we had to get buy-in from an executive leadership team who you know, these weren't the sort of conversations that we normally had here. So there was that bit of, you know, I suppose bringing everybody along with us. And I think Edmund paved the way for me to do that, by reaching out in advance, by sharing what he was trying to achieve, what he wanted to achieve. And that was really important because I suppose that opened the door for me to walk through.
That's a great point because Edmund played a hands-on role at the appropriate times in terms of the purpose evolution. And I love the fact, I didn't know that Edmund actually had reached out and talked to his colleagues on the leadership team and provided context. So Edmund, I'd love to ask you, you had some absolutes. When you wanted this vision, this purpose process. And so can you share a bit about, there were certain things that you asked Catherine and ourselves to do that you just felt these are critical for us to do this authentically.
What we didn't have, which was probably a little bit of a challenge, if we, you know, just maybe to start there first, Carol, was that we actually didn't have a burning platform as such. So, you know, when you have a burning platform, it's much easier actually to engage. It took a little bit of a push to get the thing going. But the big question, Carol, as you know, was the why.
Mm-hmm.
The why we do what we do. We found it really easy to talk about what we do, how we do, you know, let's say how we measure ourselves, you know, where are we going, all that, you know. But the why, it was kind of like it was difficult. It was more difficult to answer that question, and it was that was kind of the unlock for us. Was, you know, you're sitting down with senior people, and Katrin made a great point that, you know, a lot of the management team, the exec team, were fairly heavily tenured people. And I think Katrin coming in, let's say, with no baggage, without all the history, I think was a really positive, let's say, direction of travel, and was an enabler in the whole thing. And it was through the process of asking, well, why do we do this? That was the unlock, because nobody had a really crisp answer to the question, and felt that, you know, kind of felt, you know, well, sure, we know why we do what we do. Well, if we know why we do what we do, let's put it down. Let's capture it and put it down on the piece of paper. And I think once we talked about that, and you know, the regional, we run the business regionally. Once we got the regional CEOs bought into that, it just took off.
Yeah.
Because the you use the word absolute. We could use other words, non-negotiables or whatever.
Right.
But what was an absolute was that the regional CEOs had to lead this out in the region and had to sponsor it within the region, and knowing that, you know, there was an expectation that this is something we were going to get comfortable talking about, why we exist as an organization and why are we here and why are we doing what we're doing. And I think that was an important part of the journey to try and bring the leadership team together, and leadership team on the same page. Because there was, I guess, a little bit of a discussion. Well, why do we actually need to do this?
Right, there was skepticism, of course. Yes,
there was a little bit of skepticism. Yeah. So, and we worked through it.
I remember Edmund and I. Edmund always had a section on each of our sort of executive meetings where we would sort of update on the progress. And I think a key enabler in that process was when we fed back the feedback. Because everybody had a real clear view, but I suppose what I was by taking a, let's say, objective, let's say, data driven approach and feeding it back, it was clear that while directionally everybody was pointing more or less in the same direction, we weren't fully aligned in terms of the why we exist and why we matter in the world, and I think feeding it back, Edmund, sort of made people think, oh, okay, so maybe we're not all on the same page.
You're not,
entirely.
Yes, yeah, the big surprise. You have grown a lot through acquisition, and you know, you made it very clear that you had these wonderful companies that you had acquired, but their cultures were so different. And I remember Edmund and Katrin, you know, you're saying that one of the goals of the purpose process and then identifying it is to create, as you said, Edmund, alignment and clarity so that you're going to come together as one Kerry. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because many of, especially the B2B companies in the world, grow by acquisition, and they have varying cultures.
Clarity, consistency, alignment, absolutely critical. And I think, you know, as part of the onboarding process of, you know, let's say new people being hired into Kerry, onboarding of acquisitions, even, you know, long before we actually, you know, let's say make a decision to acquire a business, we talk about Kerry, we talk about the purpose, we talk about what we're trying to achieve. And frankly, Carl, I think since we have done this work back in 2018, as we're looking at acquisitions, we're looking at them through the lens of what our purpose is, what our values are, to avoid a situation where there is a misalignment from a value set standpoint, or there's a misalignment from a behavior standpoint, or what have you. So I would say that's been an evolution within the organization, in that, of course, in the past, you'd always evaluate the business in terms of, let's say, financial metrics and KPIs, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, we continue to do that. But it also, I think, a very, I would say, a positive evolution in the process now is that we evaluate an acquisition or an investment, be it an organic investment, through the lens of, you know, is it consistent with the purpose of the organization? Is it consistent within the overall strategic direction of the organization? The strategic direction of our organization also being driven or analyzed through the lens of our purpose. So I guess as we work through this, and I guess even Carl in the catch up sessions, we would have that consistency between strategy, capital allocation, you know, the vision, the values, the purpose. Starting with the purpose, was everything lined up? Was everything consistent? Did everything build on top of one another? That was super important to us because we built a lot of this bottom up. There was a potential that people could end up going in different directions. Very global organization, 155 manufacturing facilities, 22,000 people, you know, more than 200 different, you know, office locations globally. You know, that's a potential. And as you say, grow through acquisition. So making sure everything stacked on top of one another, making sure everything linked was really, really important going through the process. But I wouldn't underestimate that point of constantly and consistently giving that message that everything is linked, everything is stacked, everything is connected.
And I have to give you so much credit because you wanted us to go into the field. I mean, we conducted somewhere between 8 and 10 workshops around the globe, you know, from Mexico, Costa Rica, Brazil, South Africa, and we did a number of them in Ireland, in India. And you also, on top of that, so it was face-to-face, usually 2 to 3 day workshops. I have to give a shout out to my partner, Talia Bosch, who was brilliant running those. Your colleagues were so excited to be asked about why do they exist? What do they do? So that was incredible. And I think it's really important for our listeners because I know everybody today is trying to get the most out of their budgets and do things quickly. But you gave enough time for this to truly engage. And so, you know, I don't know if either of you want to say, like, why that was so important to the process.
Catherine managed the process. So I just jump in here for a second, because what you described, Carl, has paid dividends ever since, because I think, and I think, you know, whether you were a board member, the chairman of the board, or, you know, somebody driving a forklift, or let's say filling a bag at the end of a line, or you're a VP of finance or whatever it was, everybody was equal in those workshops. And everybody had an input. They were brilliantly designed, brilliantly put together. The level of ownership it drove, and the emotional attachment and the emotional engagement it drove with the company was phenomenal. I'm extremely proud of that process, Carl. I think it was something that was a game changer for us in this entire process.
I think you were mentioning earlier about what were the imperatives or the absolutes.
Right. Yes.
And I do think that was, given that Edmund had worked in region, in country, he was acutely aware that this cannot feel like a top-down exercise. And that was a clear directive from him. It has to come from the regions, and not just the English-speaking regions, or not just the US, then Europe, but really every part of the world. He wanted to hear the voices. And the other imperative was to look at, we have 5 different generations working in Kerry. So to make sure that we had the new beginners, and the, let's say, the veterans are and then the third was obviously, you know, representation of different cultures and equal gender representation and functional representation. So we had the scientists, We had the marketers. We had the, you know, very well distributed. We really looked at that. You'll remember, Carol, to make sure we were effectively representing the organization. I think all of those factors were really important. Mm-hmm. And I think, I know, Edmund, we both got some really beautiful notes afterwards. Mm-hmm. People did feel listened to, their voices were heard. And the one other thing we did, if you recall, Carol, is we had breakfast sessions with graduates and new joiners. So we listened to what they were saying and that sort of their ambition, because we felt it was important to listen, hear those voices. They newly joined the organization. They were so passionate and so enthusiastic. And a lot of our people still remember that whole, let's say, journey to purpose very fondly.
I know, Carol, one of the first meetings we had, we talked about this had to be about Kerry. This had to be Kerry. We couldn't end up in a place where it felt generic. And I think that was a major, you know, it was a concern I had, Carol, I think it was fair to say. I know you and I talked about it several times, that how do we make sure that this didn't feel like anybody else's purpose or anybody else's reason for being. And you had worked with many companies all over the world, let's say, working through this. And that was something I was sensitive towards. But I think we nailed it from that perspective, because as things were coming, bubbling up through the organization, we were recalibrating with various kind of groups, you know, let's say whether they were graduates, early career people, whether it was recalibrating with the board, you know, there was that recalibration process happening to just say, does this make sense? Or do we understand where this input is coming from? And that was certainly part of it as well.
I think that what you're talking about is an intimacy. This is an intimate and really, really, and Catherine, I have to, this is a quote that Catherine once said, and she said that the purpose exploration was a journey to the center of Kerry's soul. And I just thought that was so profound. That's exactly what you're talking about, Edmund, about the authenticity, that it had to be real. And I really appreciate just the depth of this conversation. But I bet our listeners are going, okay, what is the purpose?
Yeah, so where we landed was inspire food, nourish life. And it was really interesting, you know, how all of a sudden senior leaders around the room were making it their own and actually talking about, oh, inspiring food means creativity, innovation, you know, let's say it means culinary insights. It means looking at trends, translating those trends into insights, taking those insights and translating them into, you know, food and beverage concepts, you know, that are relevant for the consumer. So all of a sudden, people around the room, it was just kind of going with it and kind of almost giving proof points before we even started talking about it. So it was actually very cool. And I think then on nourishing life, that was really about, you know, healthfulness and making products healthier and more sustainable. And, you know, could we do both? Could we make, you know, how could we have an impact, you know, ultimately for consumers by working with customers to improve the nutritional profile of their product without compromising on taste and minimizing the impact on the environment. So we were sitting around the table kind of saying, is this happening? Because we were thrilled that, I guess, straight away. And it was exciting, and it was a little bit nerve-wracking at the same time.
you're funny. Catherine, what was it like for you?
Well, we talk about giving the space and the time and the investment to let this happen. We do have to say this all happened between April and October.
It did.
It was quite intense. It was an intense period. So there was a certain sense of urgency, which I suppose, again, there wasn't a burning platform, but we had decided Edmund was having his first CEO with his top 300 leaders in down in Killarney in County Kerry. So we really wanted that to be showcased at that event. And I recall this meeting with our executive team was a couple of weeks before. And there was an element of make or break about that meeting, if you recall, Edmund, because, and we were a little nervous because if it didn't resonate, if it didn't speak to our leaders, then we knew that, that they wouldn't, I suppose, carry it through to the org. Well, we knew we would have had a problem then if there was a disconnect between what our organization, I suppose, was telling us was our purpose and what our leaders believed was our purpose. But that immediate embracing of the purpose, inspiring food, nourishing life. And then we did our event in Killarney, and that was a first as well. You know, some people would say, well, why would you go to Killarney? Why wouldn't you go to Paris or London? It's so much easier to reach. And Edmund was really clear that he wanted our full leadership team to come back to where it all began. We visited the first factory. We visited the sites, the earliest sites. We actually brought people out on a farm. Some of our people had never been out on a dairy farm. And we really let people sort of live the culture, getting some of the people who've been with us quite a long time to share the story and tell the story of how the company evolved. And I think that was really powerful. And then on the second day, we had we launched the purpose. When we did launch the purpose, it was through Edmund set it up, and there was a number of sort of lead-in, let's say, primers. And then we finally launched the purpose through a video, which ended with why Kerry matters and that's why it always will. And then we had the purpose, inspiring food, nourishing life. And there was literally an explosive reaction. People jumped up, they were clapping, some people were crying.
I remember that.
You remember that? It just had, and the clapping and the screaming or the cheering went on for quite a while. So I think we all looked at each other and said, okay,
there's something here.
We've obviously landed something that resonates here. And genuinely, it was a very powerful moment for the organization. And again, our people today, most of those leaders are still with us, and they will still remember that as a critical and pivotal moment and a real signal that we are very serious about our purpose and how it's going to guide us into the future.
Great word, signal. And I think that the way together we crafted the meeting was really important because, you know, Edmund introduced it. Then we had an emotional video. And then I love that he and I had a fireside chat because we wanted to add the nuances, the melodies between the notes, all of that. And then we also had some workshopping with your colleagues. And so, and you know, this was very special for me because in terms of the time we spent with you, we got to make so many friends. And it was wonderful to actually be at that meeting. And all of a sudden you'd see somebody and go, oh, my God, it's great to see you. And we'd hug. This pre-COVID days. And we'd hug and, you know, have kept some of those relationships since that day. In prepping for this conversation, I did ask Catherine, what does Kerry's purpose mean to you and Edmund and your senior team? And this is what she said. This gives us room to grow. The words came from our colleagues. It's powerful and flexible and can take us boldly into the future. Inspiring food is about leading our people, she said, as well as the industry. It's about Kerry's fundamental technologies, the company's R&D expertise, Kerry's passion, creativity, and teamwork. It puts food front and center, and it's far beyond individual ingredients. Of course, the second half of the purpose statement, nourishing life, also has a very broad meaning. As Catherine stated, and as Edmund will state as often as he can, nourishing life is about taking care of our people, our customers, their consumers, and society and the planet. Inspiring food, nourishing life. let's talk about now embedding it and rolling it out. Because the great thing about Kerry is that you totally understood this is not about being laminated. It is about being lived. It's a very funny phrase, but we let people use it. So talk about bringing it to life.
Over the next year, we determined that we would not reveal our purpose externally until it was truly embedded and understood internally. Because I think B2B brands, your people are the brand. So there was no point communicating anything externally until we really understood it and it was truly experienced, let's say, internally. So we held another series of workshops. We reached 22,000 people. And this was slightly different in that it was leader-led. We put together a standard, let's say, workshop program. We trained people online. We called it, training the trainers. So leaders in each country, in each region, in each function, they would get their teams together and they would walk through this purpose work. It culminated with everybody either creating a video or a poster with I Inspire Food and Nourish Life By, where they're saying, this is how my purpose, I suppose, relates to the Kerry purpose. Those meetings happened over almost a 9 to 12 month period. And it was only then, so that was almost a year after the purpose was launched internally. And it was only then that we started communicating it externally. And that was, I suppose, a nod also to the employees to be really clear that this is yours this is yours first and foremost. And it's not as you say, what did you say? It's not, laminated, you live it. And that was much more important to us than any, let's say, external representation of that.
Edmund, you want to add to that?
I think really embedding that into the organization before we did the big launch externally was a really, really important message, because it wasn't about a launch. It wasn't about PR or anything like that. This was about doing work that was really meaningful and really embedding it and getting, frankly, individual and personal values aligned to company values and giving people the opportunity, because it was personal. It was personalized in that, why is Inspiring Food Nourishing Life important to me? What do I do, to inspire food, nourish life? And so it was personalized through that, through those workshops, across 22,000 people in a way that continued to build that emotional connection with the organization as well. So that was a really important, process. And I guess we, as a leadership team, Carl, then we looked at Kerry and we took the time to do a refresh in our strategy. We looked at our portfolio, we looked at the markets we were serving, the categories we were serving, the geographies we were serving, and asked ourselves, is this where we want to be? Is this the type of company we want to be? By going through that work, asking ourselves that question, it led us to scenarios where we divested parts of our business. We made acquisitions and really accelerated acquisitions in other parts of our business. Again, aligned to our overall purpose and let's say striving towards it, striving towards achieving, the goal that you'll never ultimately reach, but continue to strive towards. And I think that was another important, I think, element of just making it real within the organization and making sure that we were living it. And holding to ourselves to account that, as we were investing, as we were making major decisions, that it was fully aligned to what our purpose was and is. And everyone around the organization, from the board all the way through the organization, going in the same direction. There's nothing more powerful than that. But taking the time to really land it was time well spent, and absolutely the right thing to do in hindsight.
I'm just curious, how did you know to do this in that way? Was that more intuition? Was it conversations with other CEOs? I know that you now have a case at the Harvard Business School, but this is very special. This is, you know, you're in the category, and I'm now going to really kind of embarrass you. You're in the category of Satya Nadella at Microsoft or Paul Pullman. I know you're laughing, but
Charles, come on.
Hubert Jolie, who turned around Best Buy. I mean, there's an intuition in there that great leaders have. And so I'm just curious, was it because of your authentic roots? You grew up on a farm, you were in County Kerry, you lived in the company so long. I'm just curious about where did it come from?
I do try my best to have my finger on the pulse of the organization, to really be in under the skin of what people feel, what people think, regardless of what part of the organization they're in. So I do set that bar for myself. That I have a good sense of what the heartbeat of the organization. And I felt that was the right thing to do. I just felt that, we're all excited to go and to do that big launch and to have the big reveal externally. But it just did not feel right. What felt much more authentic to Kerry was to really embed this first, because I think it would have backfired, because I think we had to go through that process of actually getting ourselves comfortable, you know, talking about why we existed and being proud about it,
and actually vulnerable as well,
and being vulnerable about it and asking ourselves, you know, something. You know, this part of our portfolio, this work that we're doing, is not consistent to that purpose. Therefore, are we actually prepared to make the changes?
Yeah.
You know, so we had to go through a little bit of thinking time on that as well, and hold a mirror up to ourselves and saying, well, this came bottom up. This is authentic. This is real. You know, if this is it, We need to live it, and that has implications and consequences. And you know, that was very important to the board as well, Carl, that we were truly living our purpose, and this wasn't a tick the box exercise, or this wasn't, you know, done for some other purposes. This was real, and we were going to go now and embed this purpose into our strategy and into the way we run the company. And by the way, I'm not making any virtue of this. Be honest with you, this is good business. What we have found, the best way to align the people, because you're not just getting to people's heads, you're getting to people's hearts and souls as well. So that was an important part of the overall process, giving it time to sink in, for people to make it their own, and to connect it back then to where the company was going from an overall direction perspective.
And I think you're also describing that you are a servant leader, that you are serving the core, the essence, the history, the heritage, and the future of Kerry. Catherine, do you want to add to what Edmund just said?
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier, Carl, that there were only four CEOs in Kerry's history. And that longevity of leadership, I think, is a key success factor for the organization. It means that when Edmund came in, he had worked literally from the ground up, I think probably even starting all our grads used to start in like factories or in the, you know, really building up their career, then going internationally, then going regionally, and ultimately going into global roles. I had a similar experience in my career, where I started in the local market and then evolved into the headquarters. I think what that does is it grounds you, because you never forget where you started, and you know how hard it is to be out in the field in a very large structure. And you know, maybe your voice is not always heard. So I think Edmund has that natural, let's say, empathy or understanding And a lot of the initiatives or a lot of the processes that we get involved in or that he initiates, we always think about the furthermost office or group. And I'll give you an example of that. When COVID struck first, and we had a lot of our colleagues in different markets really under a lot of strain and pressure and personal and professional stress. And we decided, I think our board and Edmund decided we want to support our local offices. What did you call it? The absolutes in how he approached that was rather than giving, let's say, a pot of funding to each region, we broke it down so every single site had their own budget or we pot for my community. We called it my community support. And so that's just a way of thinking, which I do believe. I think it is servant leadership. And I also think it comes from somebody who's been in the organization and understands from the roots up, really how the organization functions.
Discovering a purpose is hard work, but then there's the challenge and the great opportunity of embedding it. Because purpose embedded into culture, that's where the magic happens. I'd like to read a passage from the company's annual report in 2021. It was in the section under Our Culture. At Kerry, our purpose, inspiring food and nourishing life, and our values form the bedrock of and inspire our culture. I love the choice of the word bedrock. They guide the actions and behaviors of our people, of which we have over 22,000 across the world every day as we pursue our vision to be our customers' most valued partner, creating a world of sustainable nutrition. Our people represent 112 nationalities, working across 200 plus locations globally, with a presence in more than 50 countries. Through 2021, guided by our purpose and our values, our people continued to demonstrate great levels of resilience and agility. Through constantly evolving and challenging circumstances, doing the right thing by each other and our customers, our shareholders, our communities, and our planet. We are of the firm conviction that we differentiate ourselves as an organization through the quality, commitment, and integrity of our people. We lead with a purpose mindset, and empowering our teams is fundamental to our group-wide approach to people leadership. Again, embedding, that's where the magic happens, but you must be committed at all levels, from the top in the C-suite with regional leadership, also from the bottom up. So let's get back to our conversation with Edmund and Catherine. Catherine, I'd love you to talk a little bit about social impact. You talked about social impact during COVID, but Nourish Life is a lot about the social impact as well. So can you talk about how that's being expressed?
When we talk about nourishing life, we're talking, of course, about nourishing our people, intellectually nourishing our people, professionally developing our people, and also nourishing and nurturing the communities in which we have a presence. We have, for many years now, partnered with different organizations, the World Food Program, Concern, as two examples. And the way we work with those organizations, Carol, is not just about providing funding. Of course, funding is essential. However, how we partner with those organizations is in a way where we lend our expertise and the sort of vital technology know-how and experience that our scientists, that our nutritionists, that are people out on the ground, applications experts, etc., have. So that's how we like to partner with the NGOs we work with. So our presence or our impact in the local communities, it's tangible and it's real. Our My Community initiative I mentioned earlier, provides all sorts of support to local communities, typically under the umbrella of nourishing life, and it's food related. But sometimes it's supporting local schools and let's say nourishing the educational growth and development of children. Sometimes it's around nourishing wider communities.
And Edmund, I'd love to ask you, why is the social impact part of nourishing life important to Kerry today and tomorrow, especially to your employees?
Like I mentioned previously, we're in 155 manufacturing locations. In those facilities, we hire from the local community. We engage with the local community, and it's a really important part of our success. So it's social impact locally is what we're prioritizing. And it's really empowering our local teams, our local leadership teams, our local employees to have an impact in the local community in which they operate. That's really meaningful, Carol, because you're doing things in the community in which you live in, you know, that your family is in, your friends are in.
I'd love you to talk a little bit about some of your product that is now evolving from your purpose, because you're getting to a lot of plant-based nutrition.
There's a number of areas, Carl, that we've, I guess, embarked on through, let's say, coming out of this. You know, a refreshment of our overall strategy and direction of travel. The whole plant-based food area is certainly one, alternative proteins. And by virtue of the fact that there will be, and there currently is in different parts of the world, a protein deficiency. There just isn't enough protein. Animal protein is very expensive, getting more expensive as we all know. And how can we develop over the medium term and long term protein alternatives that taste good, that are economically affordable, that have the right texture, that have the right nutritional quality, and that are more sustainable than the animal alternatives. So that was something that came out of this, that as we reevaluated the end use markets and the categories that in which we operate, is there other things we should be doing or looking at that is aligned with our purpose, but also, of course, that's aligned with what's happening in the marketplace. And that certainly was a journey that continues. I think the other area I touch on, Carol, is the whole area of food protection and preservation. Completely new area to carry. Just in the last 3 years or so. Again, it was the primary driver there was food waste. So how can we have an impact on food waste? How can we help reduce food waste? We know that 30% of food produced is wasted. What can Kerry do? Can Kerry build a portfolio that can have an impact in reducing food waste? And we went on that journey, building up through a series of acquisitions, a very significant portfolio that helps us and helps our customers to extend the shelf life of food. And we know if we can extend the shelf life of food, obviously in a safe way, and also maintaining the freshness, the food safety aspects, the quality, and the taste, of course, of the product, by extending those shelf life days in that way, we know we can extend the opportunity for that food to be consumed, therefore, thereby reducing food waste. So when I talk about, and when we talk about, let's say, living our purpose within the organization, it's fully embedded into our strategy. Our it's actually the other way around. Our strategy is fully embedded into our purpose.
There you go.
Both, and it's these are not independent things. These are fully connected interdependencies, and I believe we're consistently evolving. The portfolio in line with Inspire Food Nourish Life.
Yeah, our vision is that we work and we're our customers' most valued partner, creating a world of sustainable nutrition. And that vision is all about reaching 2 billion people with sustainable nutrition by 2030. And as Edmund referred to, there are very complex food industry challenges that we have to be part of finding solutions for. How do we reduce food waste? How do we make sure that we can provide, you know, affordable food for the burgeoning population? How do we improve the health and nutrition of our food by reducing salt, sugar, and fats? And how do we reduce the carbon footprint of food on the planet through innovation and technology? And these are all very real challenges that our industry, that the world faces. So I think our purpose helps guide our innovation, our technologists, and our leadership to develop solutions that very tangibly respond to some of those challenges. Of course, working with customers, working with NGOs, and working in the broader food industry ecosystem.
I'm wondering, do you either of you have a story about either related to an employee who's been really touched by the purpose? And I'd also love to hear, is there a customer story?
Just in the last couple of weeks, Carol, I was with a customer in Turkey, actually. They were sharing with me, they didn't put a number on it, but they were sharing with me the scale of the amount of food, of actually baked bread, that they were disposing. You know, inflation is a major issue all over the world. I would say particularly so in Turkey, actually. Bread, as we all know, is a staple. And the owner of this business, which is quite a significant large-scale bakery manufacturer in Turkey, was, let's say, really concerned about the impact on, you know, a very large part of the population that was counting on bread and baked goods as being the most important, let's say, food type that they consume. So bread is consumed in a pretty large quantity in Turkey. It's a huge bakery type of market. And he was concerned that because there was so much bread being wasted, that, and with on top of it, the level of inflation, that the combination of those two things was going to have an even bigger impact on the lower socioeconomic, cohort of consumers. So he was frantically out there looking for solutions that could create a scenario where he could get more baked products into the hands of more people in an economic way. So whatever the solution was couldn't end up being more expensive for the end consumer, because that was the opposite of what he was trying to achieve. He needed to come up with some solution that actually reduced the amount of food waste, because that obviously comes out of the food chain, but also didn't have an overly adverse impact on spending power of individuals in that cohort. And he didn't know anything about Kerry, to be very honest with you. And he asked me in a very open way, do you have any capability that you can help us to try and solve that issue? And I started with, well, the why Kerry exists. And this was a meeting that was scheduled for 45 minutes that went on for about 3 hours. He insisted in bringing me around his facility, down into the, into the nuts and bolts of his manufacturing facility, into his bread manufacturing facility and his baked goods manufacturing facility. I was blown away by the scale. And it was aimed towards, a lower economic, cohort of consumers. So I could see the passion that he had to try and do the right thing for the consumers in the country, and he wanted to do it in the best way possible. The way I introduced Kerry was by starting with our purpose, going down through what we were trying to achieve as an organization, and he just offered anything that we needed. If we needed to run trials in his manufacturing facility, if we needed to engage with any other people, he just completely opened up his entire organization to anything that we felt was appropriate for him to engage on. We don't know, are we going to be able to solve that problem? But we can certainly engage around it on the basis that we're both aligned from an overall purpose perspective, actually.
But your values are aligned.
Exactly.
Catherine, do you have maybe a recruiting story, or you want to build on that?
Well, there's so many, Carol, because I have yet to meet somebody who's interested in joining Kerry since, I guess, 2019. He does not cite purpose as a key deciding factor for them. And invariably, when people come to meet us or approach us, that they always talk to the purpose and how. And in one case, I was sharing something at an event, and somebody approached me afterwards and, you know, said, "Can I follow up with you?" And she sent me her CV, and she said, "When I heard you talk about your purpose, I thought this is the company I really want to work for." So our purpose is proving very attractive. I suppose the more the fact that we're living our purpose is very attractive to people looking to join our company, and it's very attractive and engaging for even university students. We do a lot of you mentioned the Harvard case study, and we tend to go to the universities. Edmund's spoken to Harvard groups. I've spoken to local university groups here, and again, invariably, you know, purpose emerges as a key theme because it resonates. And I suppose people can see how, as an organization, we're living that purpose.
We unfortunately have to wind this down. I mean, I think we could talk for 3 hours, and hopefully we can invite you back. But I would love to get from both of you, and I'd love to start with you, Edmund. What are the two or three insights that, you know, you're going to have a lot of C-suite individuals listen to this, and then those people that want their organization to truly discover and really implement an authentic purpose. What are your insights or recommendations to those individuals?
I pick up where you left off, Carol. It has to be authentic. It has to be of the people, for the people. It can't be anything generic. And that sounds very, maybe simplistic, but it's really, really important. I think it's the most important thing. Everybody has to look at themselves in the mirror and say, is this about us? Is this us? Is this real? Is this authentic? So that definitely is the first thing. The next thing I would say is that leaders and leadership teams need to be visible. They don't need to be pushing or, you know, but there just needs to be visible leadership engagement. And I would suggest that needs to be, let's say, balanced, but nonetheless, visibility. And I think the third thing I would say is be prepared to live your purpose. There's going to be implications. There's going to be consequences. And I think, you know, whether it's, you know, the board, the executive leadership team, right through the organization, that buy-in and that understanding and understanding the implications of this is our purpose, what does it mean?
That's super. Catherine, do you want to add?
The journey or the process has to be inclusive, and I do think taking that time was really valuable for us, and ensuring that as Edmund, I'm really just confirming or agreeing with what Edmund's saying. You know, just ensuring that strategy, purpose, and culture are colliding in the best way or are part of the same, you know, part of the same vision.
Well, the two of you, this has been such a delightful and inspiring to me conversation. I know it's going to have a huge impact on many, many others. I always like to give the last comment to my guests. Catherine, is there anything additional that you just want to you know, share with our listeners?
As I'm, let's say, remembering, and Edmund and I are obviously taking, and you, Carol, are taking a trip down memory lane. But as I'm remembering that the whole process, and I look at our organization today and our leadership today, I think when our new CEO, when Edmund came in and initiated or instigated this process, the results, the obvious results, But I suppose maybe the more intangible results were a unifying of your team, you know, a unifying of that leadership team. We were all getting to know each other. Some of us were new. Some of us had been there 20 years. You know, we have a new CEO coming in. And that, you know, rather than let's say, formal team building exercises, those discussions and those conversations and those debates around purpose had that effect of, I think, bringing us all together. I think it was a really powerful process for our organization.
That's another great point. And Edmund, you get the last comment.
I think, Karen, what I would say is anyone thinking about this should think about it as having fun. It was fun. It was inspiring. I think it just brought a huge level of optimism right across the organization. But I couldn't leave this session go, Karen, without using that word fun. And it just instilled a huge level of pride right across the organization that was super energizing. And this is not something to be afraid of. This is something to be embraced. I think being comfortable not knowing all the answers or where it's going to land from a mindset perspective is something that I would suggest. And I think not to be afraid to ask for some help as well. I think I think Karen, yourself and the team, you know, I can't leave this go. That was really important as well. This was facilitated. It was owned by Carrie, but facilitated by ourselves, and that also was a lot of fun as well. And I have to say thank you, Carl and Talia, and the entire team. It was a great journey.
Well, thank you for that wonderful kind comment. You were an exceptional leader, and Catherine, you were an exceptional partner and leader too in this process. And I want to thank you for being so candid in terms of your comments today. I think that they will have a huge impact on others. You did it the right way. You continue to live. You gave yourself enough space to lean into the future and to see what you're doing on your 50th and then the next 50. Because of this wonderful, sustainable nutrition, we'll all live so much longer. So I trust that we'll be able to be having this conversation in another, you know, 10 years, 20 years and such. And I love, Edmund, that you talked about at the end about, yes, it was fun, but it unleashed the energy and the magic of your people and the pride. And that's one of the very special reasons that Carrie is so successful. So thank you for joining me. I'm sure we're going to create lots of questions for you, and it's just been a delight. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
This podcast was brought to you by some amazing people, and I'd love to thank them. Anne Hundertmark and Kristen Kenny at Carol Cohn on Purpose. Pete Wright and Andy Nelson, our crack production team at True Story FM, and you, our listener. You know, we love hearing from you, so please give us feedback. Let us know names of people you'd like to hear on a future episode. How about some new questions to ask? And also, please rate and rank us, because we really want to be as high as possible as one of the top business podcasts available, so that we can continue exploring together the importance and the activation of authentic purpose. We all know every company, every brand, every not-for-profit must define their purpose, refine it, and activate it, and evolve it over time so it has the greatest impact on business, growth, and society. And by listening to these episodes and sharing them with your colleagues and talking about them, I want to inspire you to have an amazing answer to this question. What is the power of your purpose? Thanks so much for listening.